Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Welcome to Listen Now, the podcast where we go through the most important and rockin'est albums of all time. This season, we're focusing on the albums from the 1980s. I'm your host, Matt Stewart, and with me, as always, is my co-host and co-cousin, Sam Tonkin. Welcome, Sam.
Welcome, Matt. Thank you for being here this evening, day, night.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a real honour to be here, and I really appreciate you inviting me along. This week, we're talking about Dire Straits' mammoth hit album from 1985, Brothers in Arms. This was voted as the 15th most popular 80s rock album by our very fine listeners.
Thank you, listeners, for adding that in.
If people want to know what next week's album is, listen all the way to the end. We'll do it after the outro. Some people like a little surprise. If you do like the surprise, don't listen to the end. But if you do like a non-surprise, I mean, if you want the surprise to happen now, listen to the end. You can just skip there right now. What was your relation with Dire Straits growing up, Sam?
In short, Sweet F.A.
Right. You don't recall them at all.
I like the hits, yes, because of, you know, my best mate, Triple M. But otherwise, that's pretty much it. I recognized a couple of songs that I didn't actually already know, but apart from that, really didn't know much about them. Not one of Craig's favorite bands, and therefore not one I was particularly familiar with.
Craig being your dad.
Yes, Craig.
You talk about him like the listeners are on first name basis with Craig.
Yeah, they know Craig is Craig. But anyone who is new or doesn't feel like they know my dad, his name is Craig, also known as Craig.
Anyone who's new as well, should probably tell them that you weren't even born in the 80s. You were born in 1990. I was born in the mid-80s. So we both missed it pretty much. So yeah. We're having fun going back and listening to a lot of this. I mean, I don't think I've heard any of these albums in full before we featured them on the show. In fact, I haven't. So it's been really fun finding all this new music, and I've enjoyed every album to some degree. Yes,
which is shocking considering your feelings about every album last season.
Well, I'm a pretty positive
guy. You are.
And I have this theory. I can't remember if we talked about it on the show or not. I have this theory that if you want to, you can like any music.
I think we did.
I think we did on the episode that failed because you didn't press record. But
we don't talk about that. It's in the past.
That's true.
Hopefully not in repeat. So, no, I can see the waves. We're cool.
But I really do. I believe that if I want to, I can like any album. So I'm going into, I like a positive podcast. So I go into every album wanting to like it.
I love that.
And,
that's lovely.
So far, that seemed to have worked. And it worked again this week, I reckon. Although, and I'm similar to you. I knew some of their hits. I knew a few of the songs of this album. Walk of Life and what's the Money for Nothing and Your Chimps for Free or whatever, and that ain't working.
That's the way you do it.
What else did I know? Oh, the opening track. We'll talk about all this later. Other songs that I knew of theirs from before that aren't on this album include like Sultans of Swing.
The Sultan
seems
to
be their big hit, which I think is a really good song.
Which we realized earlier in the week is the Dire Straits equivalent to...
Yeah, that's right. I think of it as the Dire Straits equivalent to Cold Chisel's K-San. It's their big hit. And it was released in 1978, the same as K-San, mm-hmm. on their self-titled Dire Straits album, the same as Cold Chisel's self-titled album. Cold Chisel had K-San, and the same as Midnight Oil's self-titled debut in 1978 came out. So it's funny that those three bands that were featured pretty prominently on this show all had their first album out in 1978, and they're all self-titled.
That's wild.
Maybe that was the fashion of the time.
1978. Also, apparently, Kraken bands to enlarge themselves to go on to bigger things.
Sure. Here's a bit of Salt and the Swing. For those who don't know it, I remember once being at a footy fundraiser sort of night, like just a club night, the cover band. I was friends with the cover band who were playing, the guys from school, and they had this requested multiple times. They ended up playing it 5 times that night because it was the song that the football club really enjoyed. They just kept getting to play it over and over again.
I love that. There's always one song they're like, do it again.
Yeah. It's a good song. I do really like it. And yeah, I reckon it is sort of like their K-San. It's their signature song.
It is. I would say so. I would agree with that.
Looking forward to hearing a bit more of their biography, which you're going to share with us soon.
Yes.
Other songs that I mean, songs that I knew of theirs from that they released before this album, I was sort of surprised going through their back catalogue of singles and being like, oh, I know so many of their songs. Romeo and Juliet, Lady Rider.
I think I'd have to hear them to recognise them, you know?
Here's a bit of Lady Rider.
It does sound just like Dire Straits, doesn't it?
It's very Dire Straits-y. They've done it again.
Oh, yes, I do know this.
And then, well, you'd know it maybe from Triple M.
Triple M. I always thought it was Lady Rider, not Lady Writer.
It's like, oh, Lady Writer.
Lady Writer.
On the TV. Maybe it's about Angela Lansbury.
Probably.
From Murder, She Wrote.
Probably. I mean, that would be the most obvious. They're English. They're all English, aren't they? Well, we'll get into that then.
They are English, yeah. Then Romeo and Juliet's another one of their big ones. You know this one?
Not immediately. I feel like I could know it, but it also sounds like every other Dire Straits song ever, so I could know it by accident. Oh no, I do know it. I do.
You and me, babe.
How about it?
Hey, it's Romeo.
It's got a bit of John Cougar Mellencamp, Jack and Diane about it, like that kind of storytelling.
Oh, yeah.
Like Jack says to Diane.
Do that. Anyway, what you gonna do about it? Just looking from the start. I don't know. I think they might be one of those kind of uncool bands, but I think I like them.
I'm gonna disagree with you.
I'm shocked by that. The other one that seems to have been a hit, but I don't know by name. Private Investigations.
Sounds
suspect. Let me see if I can find
suspect.
This. That does not ring a bell, but it hit number 2 in the...
On the Spotify chart?
In the UK.
Oh, wow.
Here it is. He likes a slow start. In the vein of Trent Reznor.
Resnoir. That's what he should have been called, Resnoir. Him and Vince Noir. This is moody as.
It's all like Dire Straits is pretty moody, generally speaking. It's funny that their really big songs aren't. Like Money for Nothing and Walk of Life.
Yeah.
But the rest of it seems like it's totally different from
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Like, this got to number two. It's a nearly 7 minute long.
Holy.
It also got to 21 in Australia.
In what year?
1982.
Shit.
Got to number one in the Netherlands.
Netherlands, all right.
Did not chart in America.
How far into this song are we without any lyrics?
That's the first lyrics at minute 25. This does not ring a bell.
No.
The man knows how to play the guitar.
Oh, yes he... Yes, he do.
The knoff.
The all knoff. Right. Knoff.
Well, enough of that. I don't think that's turning into anything knoff, I've heard of. The knoff.
The knoff.
Let's get knoffed. Let's get knoffed.
Love it.
Well, I want to hear more about him, because I really don't know anything about him, Sam. And I know that you've been working on a little bio for the band, which I think... Similar to Trent Reznor, or maybe not to the same degree, but I think Dire Straits is basically Mark Knopfler.
Look, in short, yes. That is essentially, yes, that is basically same. So what I will start with, I know who Mark Knopfler is, did not realize he was old mate Dire Straits. So that was a fun fact right. to learn.
Oh, you know him also, from solo stuff.
Well, I think I just knew the name as a separate
right.
Entity. It was not ever linked with Dire Straits, so that was interesting. Also, I've spelt Straits wrong about 20 times. I put the GH in there for some reason. Adding difficulty. Yeah. Yes, actually, yes. So these guys formed in London in 1977, which was the start of the peak of punk, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting time to form a band that sounds like they do. So
we kind of learn a bit about that with Huey, right?
Yeah.
Who went on to form the News. He went over to England to break into this scene that I think Mark Knopfler was kind of in the pub rock, the English pub rock scene.
English pub rock, which is like the OGs, you know.
And then Huey and his band got over there just as punk broke and it.
And they're like,
pretty much put the end to their aspirations over there.
Yeah, they're like, you know what? We're gonna go back now. That's cool.
They hung around for a while and tried their luck, but it just never quite came. And looking back, I think they were like, yeah, we timed that unfortunately.
Well, let us go back to the start. Mark and his younger brother David, who I also learnt today was in the band.
Double Knopf.
Yeah, Double Knopf, the ultimate Knopf. They were born in 1949 and 1952, respectively, in the home town of our best mate Jimmy Barnes, Glasgow, Scotland.
Ah.
They moved to Newcastle in northeast England when Mark was seven, and their mum was English and their dad was a Jewish Hungarian man who fled his native Hungary in 1939, fleeing the Nazis, actually.
Yeah, it checks out timeline-wise. 39's when it was all going down. I know a little bit about history.
I've read a book. So they both went to a grammar school in Newcastle and then... You know, they're hanging about. They're living in Newcastle, which is where near their mum's hometown. So they started hanging out with their uncle Kingsley, which is an absolute boss first name, just on the side. And old mate Uncle Kingsley liked to play harmonica and the boogie-woogie piano, which is a style of music that stems way back from the 1800s from the African-American cultures. And was just a completely different style to like essentially the white people playing the music. And so all these like funky different styles kind of really inspired Mark especially. And he became really familiar with different styles of music. Some of his favorites were Elvis Presley and B.B. King. And then he went on in, skipping ahead a little bit, went on to study journalism for a year in 1968 and was hired as a junior reporter in Leeds. I pretty much am going to focus on Mark. Mark is Dire Straits. He ended up being a junior reporter in Leeds where he met a local furniture restorer, country blues enthusiast, and part-time performer, Steve Phillips, from whose record collection and guitar style, Knopfler acquired a good knowledge of early blues artists and their styles. And they ended up forming a little duo and performed at some local folk and acoustic blues venues. A couple of years later, he decided to continue with his education and went to the University of Leeds, graduating with a degree in English. Moving forward another couple of years, 1973, he graduated, moved to London, and...
He's moved slowly south, hasn't he? Went from Glasgow to Newcastle to Leeds to London.
Yep. And it's, you know, London is where it was all kicking off at the time. And it's funny that you talked about his guitar playing earlier because he describes finding his voice on the guitar was... he was hanging out with friends one night and the only guitar available for him to play was this old acoustic guitar with a badly warped neck, and it had been strung with extra light strings just to make it usable because it was basically about to shit itself. So he only was able to play like finger picking rather than like a proper strum. And he describes that as being like the moment that he really... found his voice, found his style of guitar playing, which I think he's got a pretty distinct guitar playing style, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
It definitely sounds like Knopfler to me. Just skimming through some of his hits there was, you know, they've definitely got a distinctive sound.
Yeah, it's like a weird like strum, finger pick kind of pattern about it, I reckon.
He's got a real good knack for writing a sweet riff.
He does. That he bloody does. In fact, he talks later on about writing Sultans of Swing, where he thought it was a really dull sounding riff until he played it on a Fender Strat or something. And he was like, it came to life and that was it. He knows what he's on about, you know. But long story short, they released their self-titled album Dire Straits in 1978. On which Sultans of Swing was on. And the album did pretty good. It went number one in Germany, Australia and France, and went number two in the US, number five in the UK, which is pretty good, I'd say.
That was at the time of release. That's interesting. Yeah, so they were big instantly.
Mm.
On the back of Sultans of Swing?
Yeah, there was a story. I think Sultans of Swing wasn't their first single that they released off the album, but they were friendly with a local disc jockey, DJ, and he really liked Sultans of Swing and started playing it, and that kind of blew him up. It was later in the year, I think it was maybe within the first 12 months, but like late towards the end of the 12 months that it actually kicked off. So immediately it was a bit like, and then later on it kicked off.
I've just fact-checked here, Sam. I don't know.
Thank you.
You know how much you can trust the internet. But it looks like they released Sultans of Swing as a single in May 1978, and then the album came out in October 1978. So, maybe it was based on the DJ's preference, but it looks like that was the first single that they released.
Legends. They've kicked off well.
I just don't want any of these Dire Straits, these hardcore Dire Straits types coming at us.
What would you call, like, the ultimate Dire Straits fan? Like, the direst of straits?
Dire Straight Edge, I'd say.
Nice. Yeah. That's pretty good. I like that.
Thank you.
in a nutshell, if we're doing abridged styles, they were relatively successful for the next, I think, three albums. And then is this the fifth album of theirs?
You're telling the story.
It's true.
But it is, yes. It is their fifth
this
album.
This is also the third or fourth album we've done that was the fifth of a band, isn't it?
Ah, that's interesting. If true.
I'm pretty sure our Midnight Oil and Van Halen episodes were both their fifth or were they sixth?
I think that was six.
You know how we feel about maths.
In the UK, though, all of their albums to this point have been top five.
Yeah. Like, and they kicked off good.
And they're coming off a number one album, Love Over Gold, in 1982.
That's a lot of albums in a short period. That's very Cold Chisel as well, isn't it?
I'm guessing it was just how they did it at the time.
Just every year, out another.
Yeah, album every year, basically.
That's pretty cool.
They missed 81. And then there was a three-year gap nearly between their fourth and fifth albums.
And then I think it was not long after that, they ended up breaking up. They were broken up for from 88 until 91, I think. They took a few years off and then got back together until 95.
Yeah, they toured this album and it was massive. Like, it was just a worldwide hit, number one everywhere. Sold in Australia, went 17 times platinum.
Holy shit.
17 times platinum.
That is a what?
14 times platinum in the UK. It went diamond in Canada and France.
Wow.
9 times platinum in the US. It just sold millions and millions and millions of albums.
That's wild.
Apparently, there was a bunch of different reasons for this. CDs were just coming out. And they sold a million copies just on CDs alone when they were also selling millions on vinyl and tape.
Shit.
Or cassette. And their second or I think it was their second single off the album was Money for Nothing. They started with So Far Away, the opening track, which we'll talk about soon. But Money for Nothing is like the big runaway hit off this with Sting doing backup vocals.
Which I only learnt listening and researching this album. I did not realize. Now that I listen to it, I'm like, oh, of course, that is exactly what Sting sounds like.
And then they released a film clip, which is this sort of super badly dated now, but it was this sort of CGI, early CGI video. And they say MTV in the song a lot, even though it's sort of making fun of MTV and the bands, I think. But it just blew up and that just sent them into the stratosphere. So, and then they, sounds like they hated it. I saw a quote from Knopfler later saying, "If you can tell me one good thing about Fame, I'd love to hear it."
Wow.
He just hated it. So that's pretty much why they went on hiatus and only released one more album after that. He just hated being in a huge band.
That's insane.
All the relationships in the band broke up or hit trouble, I think. And, it just wasn't a nice time, apparently.
Wowee.
Yeah, that's which is all a bit of a bummer.
Now, do you have a review? Do you want some fun facts?
Yeah.
I can't remember what order we do that in.
I normally do a review and then you can give us some fun facts. I reckon fun facts let's do after we listen to the tracks.
That sounds good.
So I found a review on AllMusic, which is normally where Adrian Zupp lurks.
You know what? Funny you mention Adrian Zupp. I was thinking today that we've not heard from him for a while. Bit concerned, obviously, what is up with Zupp. And I've emailed him a few weeks ago asking if he'd like to partake in the pod. No response. So I've gone back to the original source of contact and reached out on LinkedIn because I am a full adult with a LinkedIn profile. So hopefully we'll hear.
Take a hint, Sam. He wants nothing to do with us.
Zupp, please. Zupp. What's up? But
we're starting to worry again. What is up with Zupp?
We were so confident and now he's off into the abyss somewhere. But hopefully he'll come back to us and we'll keep you posted. But AllMusic, not Zupp.
Yes, that's right. So Adrian Zupp, unfortunately, didn't have a review on this one, but instead his big shoes have been filled by Stephen Thomas Erlewine. And Stephen Thomas Erlewine writes, STE,
I was trying to figure out the letters.
Brought the atmospheric jazz rock inclinations of their previous album into a pop setting, resulting in a surprise international bestseller. Of course, the success of Brothers in Arms was helped considerably by the clever computer animated video for Money for Nothing, a sardonic attack on MTV.
Wow.
But what kept the record selling was Mark Knopfler's The Knopf, his increased sense of pop songcraft. Money for Nothing had an indelible guitar riff. Walk of Life is a catchy up-tempo boogie variations on Sultans of Swing. And the melodies of the bluesy So Far Away and the down-tempo Everly Brothers style Why Worry were wistful and lovely. Dire Straits had never been so concise or pop-oriented, and it wore well on them, though they couldn't maintain that consistency through the rest of the album. Only the jazzy Your Latest Trick and the flinty Right Across the River make an impact. Disagree, but anyway. Brothers in Arms remains one of their most focused and accomplished albums, and in its succinct pop sense, it's distinctive within their catalogue. So that's a pretty good review. There's an unabashed fan review underneath this, which I might read.
Love
it's pretty
that.
Quick.
Did you write it?
No, I wouldn't call myself an unabashed fan, but I definitely rail against people who are too cool for stuff.
Yes.
This is one of those bands where people are too cool for them. I'm like, oh, fuck off.
Is this like Huey Craig all over?
It is a little bit like that, I think. and this guy definitely, he's all in. His name's Sachin Chavan, and he's given the album a 5-star review.
Nice.
Writing. And I love it. I love this sort of, he's just taking shots at the elitist type rock lovers. He says, if you aren't bent on being projected as an elite listener, and if you don't feel compelled to compare it with some of their previous output, you are likely to enjoy this Dire Straits album. And with repeated listening, fall in love with it. To me, it's a go-to album. Yes, I enjoy all their albums for different reasons, and also some of Mark's solo albums later. But the way this album soothes and resonates, I keep going back to it. This is more an experience than a review. I know.
Are you sure you really didn't write that? That literally could have been you about any of the later Cold Chisel albums where I was like, not feeling it. You're like, you know what? I loved it.
Yeah. I really think you, we'll figure this out. If you don't know a lot of the songs already, you don't like stuff.
I do.
You
I'm can't also wanting to make a snap quickly. Judgment.
Yeah.
So
your snap judgments of albums that you knew half the songs on were positive, and yes. Your snap judgments on albums you didn't know any of the songs on were negative.
Yep. I'd say that's a fair summation. Would we say it's a mature way to approach life? Yeah.
So, I like Sachin's passion. Passion
nice.
Sachin.
Oh, that's a great... If only we knew a Sachin. Do you reckon we could get him on?
Well, let's see if we can contact... He's suave. He's a real silver fox guy as
well.
Is he?
Good for you, Sachin, with your passion.
All right. So, let's go through the album track by track. I'd be interested to hear what you think. Because, the front half of the album is really packed with the radio-friendly songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then the back half slows it down and it really changes the vibe. And it makes it feel like it's a funny kind of album. It's not super cohesive, but
it was, I was about to say it felt like a bit disjointed in a way, yeah. Which by the fifth album, I feel like that shouldn't be so much, but I don't know.
Well, I think it sounds like it was the first album that really was like that. Previous albums were really conceptual and consistent, but yeah, they changed it up with this.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
All right, well, let's start going through the tracks. So here's the album opener, So Far Away. To me, it's not an album opener.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there.
I would have slid it down to like track 5 or 6, probably.
Yeah, it sounds like a filler track to me.
It's catchy. I like it. This is one of those ones that I just know from I guess, radio and stuff. I think it's a nice song.
This was one of those ones that I feel like I should have known was by them, but I didn't know was by them.
But you
like
knew
his,
it?
Yeah, like his voice is so distinctive, and I think his guitar playing especially is... It is Dire Straits. And so why I didn't connect two and two together, I don't know. But when I heard it, I was like, oh yeah. Actually, it was the same with Walk of Life. Didn't know that was by them. Which feels ridiculous now that you listen to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, they are kind... I mean, this one is really just right in their sweet spot. But Walk of Life is a bit different to a lot of their stuff. Same as Money for Nothing, track number two, which we'll hear now.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts off... The first three tracks are all hit songs as well. Or hit singles, should I say. This one's a real slow burner. Or builder, anyway. It's an 8 minute 30 smash hit song. Wild.
How? I feel like that's very, like, 70s, 80s. I don't think that happens now at all.
And it didn't happen before that either.
Oh, true. This song had a lot of, or still has a lot of... controversy around it, because he says a word in here that is a slur against gay people, and so when it gets played on, it's funny that we're doing this episode now, because about a month ago I was listening to Triple M and this came on and the word was sung, and I was like, I can't believe that is allowed on the radio these days. Like, I looked it up to confirm. I was like, I don't know if that's what I'm hearing, but it sounds like that. But it's
they have they recorded alternative versions of it at the time as well, and it's one of those ones where that I think the justification for it is that he's singing it in third person. This is like he's not the narrator singing this song. He's not singing it from his own perspective. He's singing it from a kind of an asshole's perspective.
Yeah, but, which is hard because it's that's you know, weird because it was written by them, so it's. I very much understand the issues surrounding it.
Yeah, and it's
a few different.
It's a
angles.
Word that you know. It's one of those words that you know. Probably, I doubt they'd write this song now. You know?
No, absolutely not. I don't think so.
Or write that lyric now, anyway.
No,
probably they wouldn't write a lot of this song now. Stuff about color TVs and. Microwave ovens.
I never understood what a microwave oven was. I'm like, is it just a microwave? Is it an oven?
I think it's a microwave.
Is it a weird mix of the two? Like, I just don't get it.
Oh. Well, I think it's just like saying, you don't say colour TV anymore, you say TV. You don't say microwave oven, you just say microwave. So, I think the point of this song is it's coming from the perspective of a guy who doesn't see rock as real work. He's like, that ain't working.
Yeah.
What you're doing, that ain't working.
Money for nothing.
You're getting your money for nothing and your chicks for free or whatever. Yeah.
Also, this film clip has aged horrendously.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was saying. It was one of the things that made it a big hit, right?
Yeah, well, it was early in the days of music videos, wasn't it?
I think I read before it was the first... clip played on UK MTV. Track number three is Walk of Life. This is a real feel-good hit.
Yeah, this was the one I didn't realize was from them, but really knew well.
Yeah, I think this is a nice, fun song, and it is very 80s. I mean, the first half of this album, the big hits are probably the 80s bits of the album.
Yep.
But that synthy keyboard thing... But this is a party song. The next track probably gets into even more 80s territory, but it's hard to say. Different kinds of 80s.
I always like the woohoo.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Baby, what I say, you come, Johnny, singing, I got a woman down in the tunnel trying to.
We do the walk.
Do the walk all night.
The next track four, Your Latest Trick. And this was also a single. This was like their fifth single. I don't think it particularly charted or anything. Your Latest Trick. It got to 26 in the UK.
That's not bad.
And 47 in New Zealand, but didn't chart anywhere else. I love this trumpet at the start. I think it's real cool.
It's got some real, like, war times.
And then it gets into this super sleazy 80s saxophone through the rest, which I'm on the edge of loving and hating. I can't quite
I feel like
make
there,
up my mind.
There is no more correct feeling than love-hate of a sleazy sax of the 80s. Like,
yeah.
It's wrong to feel strongly either way. It's just both.
There's something about this song, yeah. I can't place it. It's real good, it's real bad. I'm not sure.
This sound, you know what? The sax here sounds like... It just sounds like the kind of music that you'd have. Like, you know, you're watching, like, a modern TV show and they have this weird, like, flashback to, like, a 30s, like, private investigator looking for some shit or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? It just... They're like, yeah, everything's in black and white now and I'm wearing a trench coat and a hat. And this is the music playing. Yes, thank you. Noir.
And then, but then this, it just, when it clicks over there into this saxophone, it's, this. I mean, all 80s hits seem to have big, that's not true. I mean, going through these albums, I'm realizing that isn't the case. It was this weird stereotype in my head, but a lot of rock songs in the 80s did seem to have big sax solos.
Well, I mean, INXS had a saxophone player, so all their hits had the sax.
Tism had a full-time sax player in the 80s.
What was his name?
It was John St. Penis. Track number five is Why Worry. This one's sort of like it's almost like a kid's lullaby or something.
Yeah, this was a funny one.
It's 8.5 minutes long.
I would be lying if I said I got through the entire thing once.
This song?
Mm-hmm.
It's a builder. I'm okay with this one, but yeah, I can see that.
This is
without patience like you might not.
I can't even argue. It's so true. to sum me up in a sentence, no patience.
Yeah.
That's two words. Don't even need anything because anything longer and I'm already mad about it.
But it's just it's a real gentle song. I mean, it's called Why Worry. And it does feel like... Because was this album... Did I read before this album was recorded on a, like, some sort of tropical beach or something? Am I making that up?
Yeah, no, I definitely reckon I crossed that information. Let me see if I can find it in my notes. Where in my notes?
Yeah, they've recorded in the Caribbean.
In the Caribbean, yeah. In the British Overseas Territory. I mean, what isn't, honestly?
But yeah, this is a real... You just play this to get your baby to sleep or something.
I thought his vocals on this were super different. Is it still Mark singing it?
Oh, I assumed it was.
Me too, but, like, I thought it was so different.
Yeah, it's just like he's sort of whispering it a bit more, but you might be right, maybe it's someone else singing.
But it's like if you listen to early Aerosmith, like Dream On, for example, and Steve Tyler doesn't sound anything like Steve Tyler, so when I heard that song for the first time about a decade ago, I looked up who it was by, and it said Aerosmith, so I was like, okay, cool, who was the singer then? And it was like he hadn't, I think I read, he hadn't found his voice yet. So that was how he was singing, like, at the time. And then he eventually developed, like, his sound. Like, Knopfler developed his voice on the guitar. That's why I wondered if it was someone else singing this, because it just does not sound like Knopfler at all.
I might be wrong, but I assumed it's just him singing softer, which is sort of just appropriate for the song.
Yeah.
But it is interesting when people find their voice late. I think that happens in comedy and all sorts of stuff. They talk about that, finding
yeah.
your voice.
You yeah, start out you get
really
it.
Wearing your influences on your sleeve.
Yep.
And then you sort of slowly come into your own voice.
Mm-hmm.
The next track, number 6, I'm into. It's called Right Across the River. I love the use of sound effects. I was listening to this album running the other night. And when this song came on, because I didn't realize that there were these sound effects added, I'm like, Jesus, the weather's obviously getting warmer. I'm hearing all these cicadas and stuff. And I'm like, it's still pretty cool here. It's sort of late winter time.
That's awesome.
It does feel like spring is breaking for sure, but
it does.
It is
as
still winter
today.
And it's starting to sound like summer. But this song just has that sound.
I thought this intro was really interesting because it sounds, I don't want to say timeless isn't the right word, but it's something that I could hear now and be like, this sounds like it was recorded this year kind of thing. Like,
oh, right. Interesting.
I don't know what it was about.
For a sample then. Someone
yes,
should be getting
oh, absolutely.
This. Maybe this could be Lil Nas's next hit.
Yes. So many people did not know that fact. There was a lot
yeah,
of happy... Happy listeners. Shocked
that's,
listeners.
So talking about the last episode where Trent Reznor or a Nine Inch Nails track was used as the main sample from Little Nas's...
Yeah, Old Town Road.
Old Town Road.
Gonna take my horse down the Old Town Road. I'm gonna... Anyway, that's a fun fact from last week.
There's a real sleepy sort of sleepy kind of track.
See, I was thinking like you're in a club, like one of those really dark lit clubs. You're in a really squishy, comfy armchair, and you've had, you know, a drink or two, maybe some other things or two, and you're just like really settled for the
yeah.
night, you know? Like you're just feeling it.
How's the tonal shift from Money for Nothing and Walk of Life? It just
different.
Changes.
It feels like three different albums. Like, this it really is a disjointed album, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, they're sort of ordered in a way, but yeah, they... Money for Nothing and Walk of Life just seem like they're from another planet compared to the rest.
Saturn's Passion was not wrong when he said it is an experience.
Yes. I think the next track... Because so really it goes from Walk of Life, which is super up.
Mm-hmm.
Then your latest trick comes down in this sort of sleazy sax stuff. Then Why Worry is this low tempo, low energy lullaby. And then this one again is another low energy cruiser.
But it's like vibe and cruiser. Like real cruiser is a
yeah.
good word.
I'm into this.
Like we're feeling this. We'll get to this, but I enjoyed this one. This one was cool.
And then the next one I love because it. It sort of feels like it's going in the same way, and then it just breaks the tension and gets a bit dramatic, I quite like. So the next one is track 7, The Man's Too Strong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be honest, the vibe, just I'm remembering as I'm listening to it, it's almost a bit more like country, or like Western, old
yeah,
West
this
cowboy
is very...
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is one of my favorite tracks on the album, but when it goes bang... breaks that tension that's built up over the last basically the last 15 minutes from the last two songs.
A lot of reviews of the earlier albums, especially, they couldn't really peg Knopfler's influences. Like they were just like, this guy or this band is just so different that we don't you can't really put him into a category with anyone else. The only person that they really kind of connected with was Bob Dylan. And I thought
yeah.
this was the most Bob Dylan sounding.
Yeah, totally. The vocal on this is very Dylan-y.
Isn't it?
So it's really, I mean, if you count your latest trick, it's been 25 minutes since there's been any big energy. And then it comes up here, or shortly. This bit here.
Something's happening.
It's like it's not in itself, isolated, it's not crazy powerful, but because it's had such a long build of tension,
yep.
That bit to me just every time is so effective.
Yes, I agree.
I really like this song. I think this is really good as well. This next one, One World. So this is track 8, One World. And I think this is probably my least favorite on the album.
This sounded the most 80s to me.
Yeah.
Like, this also sounded the most aged.
Yeah, this is the most dated track on it, I reckon. I'd cut this from the album probably if I was putting it together. It also doesn't feel like it fits in. It doesn't sound like anything else on the album.
Do you know what this album reminds me of, actually? Is Chisel's 20th Century. Like, it just feels like they experimented with a lot of different... Yeah, a lot of different genres, and they were just like, you know what? We like this song. We like this song. No, like... apart from... I agree. I think maybe 5, 6, and 7 belong together, and 1, 2, and 3 belong together.
I reckon 5, 6, 7, and 9 belong together.
Yeah, okay.
So if you took this one out, then it would be a real smooth... It would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
The second half of the album would all fit together.
Yep.
Basically. But
basically.
This has probably got more in common with the earlier sort of radio... 80s radio-friendly stuff.
Triple F.
And then maybe So Far Away is the bridge in between the two. The sort of radio-friendly stuff and then the...
Moving into the
slower,
the vibin',
mellow
the vibin'.
Stuff.
Yeah, like light up a doob and sit in the corner kind of vibe.
Yeah. But this one's got such funky bass.
It is. It's got a dirty little bass line.
Yeah. And then the title track tucked away right at the end, 7-minute title track to close out, and it's not as slow as Why Worry, but it's in that. It's real down tempo, but. I don't know, something about it is pretty amazing to me.
Got something.
Well. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right, it's a weird album. Such a weird... Like, when I was expecting the whole album going into it to be songs like Money for Nothing and Walk of Life.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. But then, like, even Money for Nothing and Walk of Life, I think are, like, two different ends of the Dire Straits spectrum.
Right, yeah.
Which is funny because coming into this, I really thought everything sounded the same. So,
yeah,
listening to it, this is of all the albums we've listened to so far, this is the one I've listened to the least.
Oh right, I've been smashing it. I've been listening to it a lot.
That surprises me not at all.
I think this might be my favourite track on the album, I think.
Really?
I think this, The Man's Too Strong. I quite like a lot of these tracks. I like this one for sure,
well,
I really like. I like The Man's Too Strong.
Oh wait, are we doing them now or are we getting to them later?
Well, I'm giving you a short list for now.
Why not?
Going through, I really like. I really like The Man's Too Strong, Right Across the River.
Mm-hmm.
Your latest trick, I'm not sure about. Why Worry is, you know, I'm not sure about those. But I kind of like them enough. And they work on this album, I think.
Mm.
Walk of Life is fun. Money for Not. I think my two standout tracks are Brothers in Arms and The Man's Too Strong.
Interesting.
What do you reckon?
I like as a package piece, I like 5, 6, 7. So Why Worry, Right Across the River, and The Man's Too Strong.
Yeah,
so that is a bulk. Not like one over the other, but those three together as an experience.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. And I reckon The Man's Too Strong works better coming after Why Worry and Right Across the River.
Yeah, yeah, I agree too. I think
I
by
like
itself
that chunk
it's a bit. Eh.
But it's interesting because a lot of the reviews I was reading were like the top half of the album works and the second half is a bit patchier. But I almost think it's the other way around.
I would agree, because I just think Money for Nothing and Walk of Life are so different, and then So Far Away and Your Latest Trick are just like, it's literally like the songs that were released as singles are great as standalones, but as a collection, as an album, I just don't think they fit together, whereas that 5, 6, 7 chunk is just like a piece. It feels like Evie parts 1, 2, 3 kind of thing, you know? Like, they just feel like they need to go together and you can't listen to them by themselves. Unfinished Story. Do you know, out of interest, I listened to their first album just to kind of, because I thought so much of their stuff sounded the same. So I was like, let's give a comparison. And it's definitely, they've got like a fuller sound now. But the opening track to their first album, I think it's Down to the Water, it sounded like Mossy. I dead set thought it was maple syrup moss. And then some cymbals came in. I was like, oh, yeah, nah. But the guitar straight in, I'm like, from Mossy?
For is this new you? Listeners, that's maple syrup moss is the guitarist from Cold Chisel, the band that we featured in the first series of this show. And it does look like we've got a bunch of new listeners. I would, I'd recommend, if you're up for it, going back to first season, and we deep dived on rock band, pub rock band called Cold Chisel, who sort of vaguely similar to Dire Straits. They started out in the pub rock scene of Australia, and in Australia, they never became worldwide.
In 1978.
Huge, but they did become Australia huge. They became an arena rock band in Australia.
Yeah.
Before they imploded.
Even
and
to
then
this
reformed.
Day, they're huge. Classic rock band.
And that was fun. I think we should do that again down the road, one series about a band. I like exploring the journey of a band. And I'll try and do it more critically for you next time,
I think.
Sam. I'll try and be meaner.
Someone's got to be positive. Someone's got to be positive. We're the yin and yang, right. Where you are the light and the happiness, and I am the, this song sucks.
So that's the album. So, I feel like we're not too far away from agreeing on this one.
Maybe.
In terms of what we see as the highlights and what we think works the best.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, definitely yes. Do you want some fun facts hit some grades up? So, things that I found interesting. Is that a new segment? Things that I found interesting.
Right.
We can figure out a better name.
I'm enjoying that as a name.
It's you know, it's nice and succinct. Knopfler is left-handed but plays the guitar right-handed.
Ah.
Which I feel is not a very regular occurrence.
Yeah, I wonder, is it the kind of thing where did he learn right-handed because he just had a right-handed guitar, or was it...
I wondered that, especially with the comment earlier about the, the guitar that he kind of found his voice on, like this just beat up old bloody thing.
Yeah.
And he's right. Like, I don't know, I guess that'll do for it.
Because didn't Jimi Hendrix and Kurt Cobain, I think, both play, am I remembering that right? Played right-handed guitars left-handed. They just string them upside down. I might be making that up.
No, that sounds about right. I know that Slash learnt on a guitar that was missing like half its strings. I think Slash's guitar had like 2 strings and he's like, yep, that'll do.
Yeah, right. I'm pretty sure my mum actually, I know she's left-handed, but I'm pretty sure she plays guitar right-handed.
Well, my dad's a lefty, Craig, as we mentioned earlier. Yeah, my siblings call him Kragos Barbados, or just Barbados for short. Don't ask me why these names come about. I don't know.
Okay.
But dad's a lefty, and he writes left-handed. He kicks footy on the left foot. But any bat and ball sports, so tennis, golf, anything like that, right-handed.
Interesting.
Which is so weird.
Yeah, I wonder how that works.
I know. I'm everything right-handed. My left hand is just a useless attachment to my whole body, because I'm like, what are you doing, bro? Other fun facts for you. So Knopfler is a 4-time Grammy Award winner. He is the recipient of an Edison Award, which I've had to look up because I don't know what that was.
Thomas Edison?
I want to say no, but I don't know.
Okay.
my notes of... Oh, it is! Named after the inventor Thomas Edison. I did read this earlier and apparently don't remember any of it. That's wonderful.
You don't know what for?
I can find out. Past recipients. Oh, wow. Past recipients also include Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, Martha Stewart.
Yeah, okay. That's a mixed
Robert
bag.
Palmer? Wait, as in the Robert Palmer? No, American business man. Not, what was one of Robert Palmer's hits?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news.
Give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. Edison Awards runs an annual competition honoring excellence in innovation in a broad range of categories. He is also a winner of the Steiger Award, which is an international award, reflecting the qualities of responsibility, honesty, openness, and hard work. And the Ivor Novello Awards, which is for songwriting and composing. So he's got a very broad collection of awards, I suppose you could say. He also holds 3 honorary doctorate degrees in music from universities in the UK and was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of Dire Straits in 2018.
Right.
So, you know, it's just casual, whatever. Not even worried.
I've just looked up his Grammys. I was expecting them to have all come from this album, but only one of them came off this album, which was for Best Rock Vocal Group for Money for Nothing. His other Grammys were in 1986 for Best Country Instrumental Performance with Chet Atkins for Cosmic Square Dance,
Chet Atkins was listed as one of his inspos in the early days, so fun that he got to perform with him.
And then in 1991, again with Chet Atkins, he won 2 more for Best Country Vocal Collaboration.
Best Bros.
For Poor Boy Blues and for Best Country Instrumental Performance for So Soft Your Goodbye.
I'm pretty sure once they broke up, Mark Knopfler went solo and it was a lot of country.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting. I've been listening to a little more country lately. I've definitely, as a kid, I thought, I don't know, it was probably my least favorite genre. And now I've definitely warmed to it quite a bit.
It's one of those ones that I battle with, but some Keith Urban.
Oh,
Australia's
Keith. I do find pop country pretty hard
to
listen to for the most part.
Like Taylor Swift?
I don't know if I know any of her when she was doing pop country stuff. I don't know if I would even know any of it. Like her pop stuff, I like some of that.
Hmm. Oh, 1989 is such a great album, and I will never speak ill of Taylor Swift.
Right, yeah, I couldn't tell you. I'm struggling to think of any names, but I remember there being some songs.
I knew you were trouble when
you popped
in.
Yeah, that's a good song, I think.
Also, look it up with the screaming goat intervals, because that's great. That's a fun time. I might post that later in the week.
The country I've been listening to more, it's been like Johnny Cash and Waylon Jennings and stuff like that.
Yeah, nice one.
I don't know if they're fully in the same
zone. Do you know what we didn't mention last week, speaking of Johnny Cash, is Johnny Cash's version of Hurt by Nine Inch Nails. I can't believe we forgot to mention that. I read it numerous times and...
Well, it wasn't on that album, so it wasn't really relevant.
It was a lot later. To be fair, it was a lot later, but I feel like it was one of those things that...
I reckon
it's just so significant.
I feel like we'll do a 90s series one day and that'll come
up. I'm down for that. We got a lot. Does that wrap it up for this album?
If you're all done with your fun facts, for sure. Now, I guess the only thing we got to do is rate it and see if there's any letters in the letter bag to Alan.
Beautiful.
So, what are we rating out of 80?
Yeah, rating out of 80. Rating.
I really wish I'd been keeping track of what I'd been giving other albums because I can't really remember. But I like this. I know I've listened to it.
They've all been high, if that helps you at all. Like top third of the number.
I think, there's a reason for that. These are the top 20 voted for albums. These are all albums that people really love. So it's not like it makes some sense that they're all very good. I think this one, I've been listening to it over and over. I don't know how much I listened to it after today, but I really do enjoy the back half, which took me by surprise. The first time I listened to it, I'm like, oh, this back half really just blends into one long, slow thing. And then
one long day.
A week later, I've listened to it 20 times. I'm like, oh, man, I'm loving some of these songs.
This piece.
Yeah. So I think out of 80, I feel like I would. And some of this stuff is so 80s. Some of it I feel like is actually quite timeless, you know. But my favorite two tracks, I'll stick with what I said just before, Brothers in Arms and The Man's Too Strong. But I really like Ride Across the River as well. And I think I will give it, out of 80, I'll give it 65.
Nice.
Are you taking these numbers down? You did last season.
I am collectively. I haven't posted them anywhere, but I can do that.
Keep score. I reckon we should do, we should keep an update of that.
How yin is Matt and how yang is Sam.
How did you rate this one?
Look, I really battled to listen to this more than probably 5 times. I just couldn't get into it. I did find myself, I've always disliked Money for Nothing. I think it's just one of those ones that I've maybe heard too much on the radio, but not enough of the rest of their stuff. So it was just like a kind of.
It's interesting because that's how people who are around at the time talk about it. They say it was just played so much that they can't stomach it anymore. I've read that a lot this week reading about them. They were just overplayed, oversaturated.
Yeah.
And somehow you've got that even though you weren't born until 5 years later.
Yeah, listening to it, how many years later is this? Like 35? But then, album, like K-San, for example, we've both heard that song so many times, but then in context, it was okay again. But this one, I didn't like it on the radio on Triple M, and I don't like it now still. I really do. That my mind has been changed. That's the way we don't do it, actually. I really enjoyed and shocked myself, really enjoyed 5, 6, 7. They are my favorites as a piece. I will not separate them into a favorite because I think that they are just this beautiful story together.
That's fun, especially because you said that you've never listened to 5 all the way through.
No, because, well, it got to like, what's it, like 8 minutes or something?
8.5 minutes,
Yeah, I probably got to like final things and then I'd skip to the next one, but it still kind of fit because the song didn't change a whole lot.
I like how we, even though you kind of dislike the album overall, I like how we've liked similar parts of the album.
Yeah. And it's also the parts that are not the singles that were released, which is interesting.
And I don't hate the singles like you do. I feel like Walk of Life is a fun song. I mean, it feels a bit throwaway.
It does. It's such an odd song. Do you think it's aged? I feel it is a bit.
Feels like the first half of the album is super 80s.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily mean that as a positive or a negative. It's just of its time.
It is just, it's an observation. Whatever that means.
Yeah.
I am going to rate this, don't hate me, 30, because it was a battle. It was really a battle. This has been my least favorite that we've had to listen to so far by a long shot. But I am pretty stoked.
Yes. You did say before we even started listening to it, you said that you were not looking forward to this.
No. And to come out with 3 good songs that I didn't know already.
You had some emotional scars coming into this from the album.
I'm just thankful that we don't have to listen to the Eagles because I probably would have just sat that episode.
Yeah, I'd give it a go, but I think I'm probably in a similar spot. I feel like Eagles would be more of a battle than this for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I'd find something in the Eagles that I didn't realize was there as well.
I think I've told the story about why I don't like the Eagles so much.
Yes.
Yes.
I think you did. Well, I can't remember what it was, but I remember you telling it.
You used to work in retail. That album used to get played a lot, the best of.
That's right.
And it was like the extended edition best of, and it'd be played multiple times during the week.
They'd play it with the visuals as well, wouldn't they? That concert where they'd all sit up the front playing together. I remember walking in a JB and that would always be on.
No, we got stuck with The Art of Flight, which is a snowboarding documentary, which everyone by the end of it hated it, but I still thought it looked sick, like on HD. Oh, what a film. If you've never seen it, look it up. The Art of Flight. It's amazing. Do not pair it with The Eagles extended edition best of, because that sucks a lot.
That is a weird mashup if that is what people choose to do.
I mean, people decided to play Wizard of Oz with Led Zeppelin, so I'm not here to judge, you know?
True.
Whatever works for you.
Hey, we've got a... This episode's going longer than we normally go for.
It has. Sorry about that. We've wafted.
Well, I don't know why you're apologizing. I think it's just a longer album and we were having to get through 2-minute intros for most of the songs. So what? Are there any letters in the letters bag to Alan?
We have got a couple of letters. We've got David Aranda, who has a subject title, 80s Mania. Hey, Matt and Sam.
Oh, wow.
Just dropping by to let you know I'm really enjoying the new season of the show. 80s music is such a happy place for me, so I'm stoked to hear what albums are still to come. Also, I'd like to thank you for introducing me to Cold Chisel. You're welcome. I still listen pretty often, and a decent amount of songs have made it into a couple of different playlists of mine. Legend, love that. I feel as though Matt and I have a very similar music taste, and I'm still holding on to hope that he does a do go on about my favorite band, The Descendants, or maybe we'll save it for a punk rock season of Listen Now, which I'm not opposed to, Matt. I hope you have a totally tubular time with the rest of this season. I'll be listening along, David Aranda. Legend.
I imagine, Sam, thank you, David Aranda. That's a great message. And people can get involved if they want to write in at the email address, listennowpod@gmail.com. The Descendants, Sam, I don't know how familiar you are with them, but I reckon a lot of the bands you like would have grown up listening to the Descendants. They're sort of one of the early pop punk bands.
I agree. I know what their t-shirt looks like because people wear them at work all the time.
Milo, the character from the Descendants shirts, you'd know. Milo goes to college and all that.
Yeah, with the glasses.
And then Friends of Rom did a parody of it called Trevor Goes to TAFE or something like that.
I love that. Yes, Trevor, get to TAFE. We've also got an email from Alex, who has said that her husband Doot's mind was blown by the Nine Inch Nails Little Nas X fun fact, who is a big Nine Inch Nails fan following the Quatsa Nine Inch Nails concert back in 2014. Keep up the good work. Short and sharp. Love that.
That's nice.
And one more from Caitlin. Hi, Matt and Sam. I'm glad the pod is back. I'm enjoying listening to the full albums before listening to the episode. So far, I've never heard any of these albums all the way through before. Same. Hope you do a season on the 90s sometime, or maybe an AC/DC season. Thanks for continuing to put out the show during this difficult time, with extra thanks to Matt. That's because I gave you a shout out the other week for doing all the editing, even though that sucks balls and... you're the one doing it. Thanks, cuz. I've been listening to Do Go On for a few years now and jumped on board for Listen Now and Primates right away, even though I thought Primates was a joke at first, but I guess the joke was on me because I ended up listening every week. Wishing you all the best from Caitlin. On ya, Caitlin.
Hey, Caitlin. You weren't wrong. It was a joke. And
The joke is on you because now you listen every week. And is it? Did I hear recently that...
Primates is back as well, the way. Twice a week, we're doing recap episodes of the Umbrella Academy, if anyone's interested in that.
Oh, wait, watch Primates the first season. Pod.
Yeah, that's what we're doing now.
Robert Sheehan, beautiful man. Love him. Klaus.
Which one's Robert Sheehan?
Klaus. He's the one who's pretty cooked, but I love him.
He's going to get a spin-off show, apparently, Klaus.
Really? Oh, wait. He's like Robert Downey Jr. playing Iron Man, where you're like, what's the difference between you and this person in real life? Because it is the same person. And I love
that. Well, one's American, one's English, I guess. There's some difference.
Look, you got me there. You got me there.
I only learned that this week. Fun fact.
Hey.
Anyway, yeah, so if people are interested in the Umbrella Academy, check out Primates Podcast.
And do go on.
It started out as a bit of a joke, but it's a fun joke. And I've learned a lot about monkeys and apes.
Which is wonderful.
Since I started it.
We needed that.
Which are my favorite animals.
And do go on. Where can they find you for that?
Yeah, if they just search for Do Go on their podcast app. The most recent episode's actually, or maybe not the most recent by the time this comes out, but one of the most recent episodes is music-related. It's about the Woodstock Music Festival. It's the story of that. Dave researched it and he told us the whole story, and it was fascinating.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was a real mess, but it all worked out in the end. So,
and some legendary stories to come. People are keen,
they should definitely check out that episode.
Excellent. And also, because we are doing this podcast in isolation in Melbourne, we're only releasing it every fortnight at this point in time. Hopefully, that's not for too much longer. But during those off weeks, I am just going to spam our socials, Listen Now Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter with random albums that I really enjoy. Last break was Australiana, and the coming week is going to be all female artists, which I'm really excited about.
Nice. Yeah, that was great. I was enjoying watching your recommendations.
Thank you.
Cool. Well, I guess that leaves us with nothing else to say apart from follow us on social media and all that sort of stuff. Listen to our pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And our personal social medias are all listed in the show notes as well. If you want to follow us on there, please follow us on there.
Please.
Make us feel validated. Anyway, that's all the time we've got here for Listen Now this week. So there's nothing left to say apart from goodbye, Astrid.
Goodbye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Hey, mates. This is Matt. Sam has left, but this is the post-credit announcement of the next episode's topic. And I thought, rather than just spelling it out, because some people might accidentally be listening to this, maybe it's just run on and they don't want to know. So, to make it a little bit more fun, I'm just going to give you the first lyric of the album, and it goes like this. This is a public service announcement with guitars. Now, you'll either know that, or you'll can look it up if you want to, or you can ignore it. You've got all options available. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to it. So, we'll see you next time.
Let's get naffed.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.